This episode of To The Journey is brought to you by Audible.com, offering more than 150,000 titles for your desktop or mobile device. To get a free audiobook of your choice, visit audibletrial.com/trekfm. And also by Enterprise in Space. Find out how you can help science and education and become a virtual crew member aboard the NSS Enterprise Orbiter. Visit enterpriseinspace.org for more details.
This is Tim Russ, Lieutenant Commander Tuvok on Star Trek Voyager, and you're listening to Trek FM.
I think it's safe to say that no one on this crew has been more obsessed with getting home than I have. But when I think about everything we've been through together, maybe it's not the destination that matters. Maybe it's the journey. And if that journey takes a little longer, so we can do something we all believe in, I can't think of any place I'd rather be, or any people I'd rather be with.
To the journey.
You're here.
To the journey.
Hello, everybody at home, and welcome. This is To The Journey. I'm your co-host, Suzanne Williamson, and with me, as always, are...
Zachary Frueling and...
Kay Shaw.
Well, we're back again, guys. This time, we're going to be talking about Season 3, Episode 15, Coda, also known as the one where Janeway dies repeatedly. Kay, what do you think about Coda?
I love Coda. I'm a really big Coda fan. Anyone who's around on the Babel conference when From There to Here did their Coda episode will know how much I love Coda.
I'm sure Lee remembers it well.
Sorry, Lee. He does. Yeah, I may have got my caps lock out. Zachary, what do you think of Coda?
Yeah, I've got to say, I'm actually a little bit in the minority on this one. I know you guys love Coda. For me, it's never been one of my favorite episodes. There's parts that I really like, and I think for me, it's hard to know exactly what I don't like about Coda that makes it not one of my favorite Voyager episodes. I love the Janeway Chakotay interaction. I like some of the dream sequences. It just doesn't add up for me. So it's actually not one of my favorites, but I'm looking forward to being schooled by you guys. Where am I going wrong here? Why should this be on my list of favorite Voyager episodes?
Because there's a lip lock involved in this episode. Janeway, Chakotay, lip lock. Sure, it's CPR, but still.
Correct.
There's some action going on there.
It's the closest they ever get.
It is pretty much that simple, isn't it?
It was Jerry Taylor throwing a bone to the JC fans.
Yeah.
I did rewatch the episode before we started recording today, and I gotta say, it actually got me tearing up a little bit. Like, you know, the rest of the crew is so sweet to Janeway in their mm-hmm. memorial speeches, and you know, she's tearing up, and I'm tearing up. I was actually having a little bit of a moment with it today when I was watching it.
Oh yeah,
I cry every time.
It's like, no, Captain can't die.
Every single time. There's actually two bits that make me cry.
What's the other one?
One bit during the memorial mm-hmm. service. Yeah. But there's also the bit during one of the dream sequence repeats, if you like. I know they're not really repeats because they're all different, but the one where you actually see her die on the planet
in Chakotay's arms,
and we get Chakotay's reaction to that and his little tear, and oh yeah, that hits me right in the feels.
Robert Beltran kills that scene. He kills it. He's just.
Absolutely
so
kills it.
Emotional and yeah. It's like one time that they gave him something to work with and he proved himself. Why didn't they just keep him giving him stuff to work with?
Yeah, I agree. I think those particular scenes, or that same scene repeated in several different ways, is actually one of his finest ever performances that we see on Voyager.
Oh, definitely.
For me, anyway.
Definitely, hands down.
I don't know what you think about that, Zach.
Well, you've got to give Kate Mulgrew credit too, because I mean, it's hard to do one death scene, much less... you know, the four or five she gets in this episode.
I feel like I should have counted how many, but I didn't.
Yeah, my favorite death scene of hers in this is where she has the phage and the doctor euthanizes her.
Yeah.
I was like, yes, he's gone all Dr. Kevorkian. Yeah. She's all... and on the ground. I was like, that's awesome.
I mean, did that scene kind of give it away too quickly that this was a dream sequence, that these were hallucinations, that this wasn't real? Because for a while, I think you're really not sure, you know, what's real, what's not. Is she hallucinating? Is she not? And I think that scene is pretty implausible.
Yeah.
Oh, it totally gives it away. Because for me, every time I think, well, if this was real and that's what he was going to do, why on earth would he not have done it before she woke up?
And why would he be alone?
What merit was there in telling her that he was going to euthanize her? Why did he not just do it?
That's particularly cruel. I'm going to wake you up so I can euthanize you.
Yeah. It's like, if he was going to do that and she didn't have any choice in the matter and he was just going to do it whatever, he should have just done it and then she never would have known anything about it.
But that's no fun for the doctor.
I bet the doctor also pulls the wings off flies in the spare time.
Just one wing so that the fly can still try.
But yeah, I do agree. It definitely starts to make you think, hang on a minute, what's actually going on here? This isn't just a time loop. There's something more to this.
Now, why with all these time loops, couldn't they have taken it back further and shown us the talent show? I can't be the only one that wanted to see the talent show.
I know. No, you can't. I have written down on my pad here, biggest frustration with Coda, we don't get to see Janeway perform the Dying Swan.
Exactly. I mean, I could do without Harry Kim playing the clarinet.
She would be really graceful.
Oh, yeah.
Don't you think?
She would.
Yeah.
I could even enjoyed some of Tuvok's poetry. Maybe one poem.
Enjoyed? Maybe we could think about the word we want to use there, but yeah.
Well, that's why I narrowed it down to just one. If he just did one poem, we could enjoy that. More than one, probably not.
And it is fun to think about what Chakotay's talent would be. I mean, the thing that comes immediately to mind, given our running joke on the new To the Journey, is that it would be the Chakotay whittling show.
You had to go straight there already, didn't you? I love it.
Performative whittling.
Or speed whittling.
Performative whittling.
How many things can he whittle in a minute?
Yeah.
So that's quite a cool idea, actually, because not too far from where I live, every year they have this kind of big... It's called a Wood Fest. They call it the Wood Fest Wales. And it's basically like a big summer festival where they do loads of woods. I'm not lying. This is true. Honestly, I haven't just made it up for the purposes of you all to laugh your heads off now.
A whittling festival.
And they do all these kind of like really cool stuff. And one of the things they do is chainsaw carving. So I'm just now imagining Chakotay with the 24th century equivalent of a chainsaw.
Yeah, you know. Now I'm picturing sort of like Chakotay chainsaw performative interpretive dance sculpture thing.
That would be awesome. Although he'd have to be careful with the chainsaw.
That is a mental image and a half.
In leather. In his Maquis leather.
Well, he'd have to be wearing the leather in order to protect himself from, you know, flying bits of splinters and all of that. We wouldn't want him to get an injury.
Everybody in the first row gets to wear safety glasses.
Yeah, Suzanne's salivating. She's got her front row seat. She's got her safety glasses like she's going to a Gallagher show or something with a watermelon flying.
I mean, yeah, we're saying all of this about the whittling, but I actually was quite looking forward to him phasering an apple off Captain Janeway's head. I thought that was a brilliant idea.
I love that she tells him.
Maybe he could do phaser wood carving. Phaser wood carving. That is the 24th century equivalent of chainsaw carving.
Now, would it be the handheld phaser or the compression phaser rifle?
It would depend on how adventurous he was feeling that day. He can do both.
That's the difference between whittling and chainsaw carving, right? Don't we see someone carving something with a phaser, some piece of art at some time in Star Trek? I off the top of my head, I can't remember the episode, but I'm pretty sure we see someone carving something with a phaser.
I don't remember that.
But I can't remember it right now.
I'm going to have to look that up.
I don't remember it off the top of my head, but that doesn't mean that we didn't.
About all I remember is them heating up rocks. That's it.
Listeners, if you remember this, let us know what episode it was of which Star Trek show.
Yeah, we failed the quiz, so.
We did fail the quiz.
I didn't know there was a quiz. I didn't study.
It wasn't about Voyager. Are we supposed to know about all the others as well?
So there's some other stuff that I just find wildly implausible in this episode, like... For example, the apparition of Janeway's father, I just find wildly unbelievable.
Oh, and did you notice? He was wearing the wrong comm badge.
Yes, he was wearing the wrong comm badge. It was a modern comm badge.
Mm-hmm. With an old-style uniform. Made no sense.
Yeah. And he died, like, what, 15 years earlier at this point? So that was one that they let through the net. When you say you find him really implausible, Zachary, what do you mean? Do you mean, like... that she believed that it was her father.
Yeah, it's nothing I can really put my finger on. I mean, he's trying to kind of seduce her out of her comfort zone, get her to come along with him into the next plateau or the next plane or the next whatever, and it's all really vaguely defined, and it just doesn't strike me as very believable. I mean, Janeway, being a scientist, should have her skeptic radar on, which she does, and it's just, I mean, the amount of proof it would take to convince Janeway that this is actually true is a pretty high mm-hmm. burden, and she kind of follows him around. You know, he does lead her around, and he's got her almost convinced. I don't find that very, very plausible.
I don't know, though. I mean, like, I do understand what you're saying, and I think in a normal circumstance, I would absolutely agree with you, but I think the fact that we know from anyone who's read Mosaic, and it's alluded to as well in this episode, you know, how close a relationship she had to her father and how devastated she was by her death. So I think the fact that he's chosen that is what makes her sort of go with it for so long. I think if it had been anything else, she'd have been no, no, no. But I think the fact that it's her dad, and she's obviously, that's a really emotive thing for her, I think that just colours her judgment more than it normally would do. That's how I see it anyway. I don't know what everyone else thinks
about
that.
Well, actually, Jerry Taylor, who wrote Mosaic, wrote this episode. So that's why there's a lot of callback to things from there. I really don't think that Captain Janeway believed fully, even just for a moment, that this was her father. Not any moment in time now.
I don't know. The first 2 seconds.
But the daddy. Daddy.
Yeah. I love that. I really like the fact that we see that. Because that is Captain Janeway completely unguarded for me.
That's Catherine, not Captain.
That is really nice. Yeah.
And I don't mean to be too critical of the episode. Because, like, you know, I love Voyager, as you guys know. But this episode strikes me as not just a rehash of one episode, but it's taking like 3 or 4 different things we've already seen in Star Trek and combining them in a new way. It reminds me of like the Nexus from Generations, because, you know, you go off to this higher plane where it can be whatever you want. Yeah. It also reminds me of Time's Arrow from the Next Generation, where these, you know, alien life forms are trying to, you know, suck the life force out of you. So he's trying to, you know, get Janeway's life force. And of course, it's kind of a rehash of the next phase in the Next Generation.
Definitely.
When LaForge and Ro were invisible and everyone thinks they're dead. So, you know, it just seems like a rehash of some of these elements we've already seen. So it didn't really strike me as very novel. I mean, I love the Janeway Chakotay interaction, of course, but nothing else in the episode really grabbed me.
Yeah, I do get what you're saying, but I think those bits don't bother me because that's not what the episode's about for me. The episode isn't about the fact that in the last 5 minutes we find out that this alien's trying to take her into his Nexus and she's got to agree to go or whatever. It's not, that's nothing to do with it. That's like the vehicle for everything else that we get. For me, this is a character episode.
Definitely.
It's a brilliant character episode. It's full of brilliant character moments, not just brilliant character moments for Janeway and Chakotay, like we've already mentioned, but pretty much everyone in here gets, you know, some really great stuff. I mean, we see, as you mentioned before, the memorial service. You know, we get this gorgeous speech from B'Elanna. I mean, that is the thing that I remember when I think about Coda. The images of Chakotay on the planet and that, mm-hmm. that thing that B'Elanna says.
Well, I think we really get to see how Voyager becomes a close family, that there's an emotional bond between these characters that's formed fairly early in Voyager. I mean, this is only, what, season 3 of Voyager, mm-hmm. right? And it's not, I mean, this isn't season 7 like Captain Picard has finally, you know, realized that he can interact with his crew after 7 seasons, you know, 3 seasons into Voyager, and Janeway's in tears because her crew loves her so much. And that's, you know, sets the whole tone of Voyager.
But that wasn't her crew. That was what she thinks her crew would have been saying about her. Because all of that occurred inside her head.
But it never really happened. Yeah.
So I want to know what B'Elanna would really say.
I do get what you're saying. But then you've got to think, well, okay, yeah, it's meant to be inside her head. But is that how they've written it? Okay, yes, for the purposes of the plot device, it is all inside her head. As far as we know, because we don't actually know whether or not he's drawing anything from anybody else's heads as well, maybe he is. That's kind of some spin that I try and put on it to kind of explain it a bit better.
I like that spin. I like that.
But I'm not convinced that that's how they intend it when they write it. Mm-hmm. So when you watch that memorial scene, I don't think they're thinking this is what Janeway would think. I think the writers have said this is what they would say. And I know that is a problematic thing because potentially there's a lot of confusion around how that actually works in the episode. But I read it that way. I don't read it as this is what's in her head. I read it as this is what they would say.
That's interesting because, I mean, this is another one of these potentially frustrating continuity issues that we talked about a couple of weeks ago on To the Journey, that some of Voyager's best moments never technically happened, right? And this is, and all the good moments in this episode are just in Janeway's head.
No, not all the good moments. Not all of them. There's that sail at the end.
That really happened.
That's not in her head. That's real.
And Chakotay's rose. Yeah, that really happened.
Okay, with the rose, what do you think the reactions were of the crew on the bridge as he's walking by, going to the ready room with a rose in his hand? I want to know.
Yeah, but I'm pretty sure they all know exactly how he feels about her at this point.
I know, but to be as brazen as bringing a rose onto the bridge, going into the ready room.
Yeah.
Worst kept secret on Voyager. Yeah.
Especially because, you know, if this had all been in his head, we see the very last bit where he thinks that she might have almost died. But if it is in her head, the bit where we actually see her die and his reaction to that didn't happen.
No, that happened.
And to me, that's the... Yeah, well, it did in my head.
You don't think Chakotay like hid the rose while he was walking on the bridge, like down his trousers or in his boots or something?
Down his trousers.
No comment.
I do like as well how you said trousers and not pants, especially for me. I appreciate that.
Well, you've been educating me, yeah.
But no, it's interesting actually what you say about that, Stan, because I never thought about what is their reaction to that. What is their reaction to that? And then they go running off to the holodeck immediately afterwards.
They did. It's like, aren't you guys in the middle of a shift right now? Should you really be going? Did you leave anybody in charge of the bridge?
Yeah.
I can picture Harry Kim kind of looking around going, I guess I'm in charge now. Sits down in the bridge.
Yay! Woohoo, go Harry. But yeah, I find it difficult at this point, really, not to read subtext into it. Because, I mean, I know we read subtext in anyway because we're shippers. But I find it that this episode is the one episode where it's really difficult to just completely ignore it.
Oh, yeah.
Because, okay, right, let's just set this completely out of context for one moment. Somebody shows up at somebody's, in inverted commas, office with a rose. Mm-hmm. And they go, oh, we had a really bad day. Let's go for a moonlight sail. With a bottle of champagne.
Yeah.
Just the two of us on a really romantic lake. Now, is that something that you do with somebody who you're not romantically interested in? That is the question that I would pose to everyone.
Yeah, I don't see Picard and Riker doing this ever. Ever.
Moonlight sail on the holodeck with some champagne, number one.
Make it so.
Well, Picard does invite Riker to go horseback riding in the Himalayas, right?
He does, but there's a really long step from horse riding in the Himalayas to
champagne
and a moonlight sail on moonlight Lake sail. George with champagne. Yeah. Come on. I don't think we can really deny that one.
You know there's some serious like fanfic Brokeback Mountain / Picard Riker in the Himalayas fanfic out there.
I think I've read those, yeah.
I was going to say, yes, there is, probably. There's all manner of Star Trek fanfiction.
And this episode is responsible for a lot of Janeway Chakotay fanfiction.
Yes.
Is there any special significance to the fact that she wants to go for a moonlight sail on Lake George in particular?
Well, as far as I'm aware, this is the only time that we ever hear a mention of Lake George. But the amount of lore that's risen up around Lake George in fan fiction is colossal.
Yeah, I'm trying to figure out what's real and what's fanfic right now, and I don't think I can separate it.
I think this is the only time we ever see it mentioned. I think everything else is fan fiction. Yeah. So a lot of fan fiction goes with her family had this lake house or whatever.
Yep, the lake
house. George, and that's why she has this association. But I don't think that's ever really been said in the show. I think that's just something that Fick's come up with that's been rolled with by a lot of people.
I don't remember it in any of the books either, so.
I don't think it is, no.
Now, I found it interesting that even when Janeway was supposedly dead in her own mind, she wouldn't leave her crew. That, to me, says a lot about the captain herself. She's dead, but she's still not going to leave these people. She's not going to leave them behind.
Yeah, absolutely. There's actually a quote that I wrote down that she said when she was talking about that, when he's right after the end of the memorial service, when he's trying to persuade her to go. She actually says, "I won't abandon them. We're too much a part of each mm-hmm. other." So we've really seeing that family relationship already cemented this.
Definitely.
Relatively early in the show, because we're only halfway through series three.
Yeah, about.
And I mean, series one, a lot of that is a scene setting and getting to know the characters more mm-hmm. than any real development. So we're only really a series and a half into proper character development. And already that's massively believable.
Yeah. That's not something I would ever doubt of her. Ever.
No. And the impact that she's had on the crew as well, obviously. Yes. We see all of that. You know, everybody's little reactions. I mean, I really like how we see everybody's different mm-hmm. reactions to it. How everybody copes with it differently and what everybody thinks. I mean, we see Chakotay down on the planet there, his reaction.
Yeah.
That's the only time we get to see what he's really feeling about it, because once he's back up on the ship, he's like
all business.
He's in command mode, and I'm going to deal with my grief by dealing with everybody mm-hmm. else and being responsible for everybody else, and I'm not gonna acknowledge this. Interesting. I see that causing problems down the line yeah. if that had been something that had continued. Thankfully it didn't, but there we go. But yeah, that scene on the planet with him, you know, with those images are very strong images, aren't they, with the backlit lightning
and the way he says her name, Catherine, and it just breaks my heart. Yeah. It's like, you can't die on me.
Yeah.
Oh, no.
That's not a first officer panicking no, about the death of his
not
captain.
At all. Again, Riker wouldn't do that.
And I love that Janeway gets to watch this. I mean, everyone has this fantasy a little bit, like, what happens? What would my funeral mm-hmm. be like? What would people's reactions be? And Janeway gets to have that experience. And even if it's just yeah. in her mind, she gets to kind of watch it all unfold. And, yeah. you know, just the image of her watching this happen is a striking image, I think. And I think we all have those
it
moments.
Is.
Like, what would my funeral be like? I don't know.
Mm-hmm. Watching her cry as well when she's watching them talk.
I hope if I kick the bucket early, I hope you guys at least come to my funeral.
We could do that.
Let's hope you don't. I mean, obviously, we'll be walking around looking for your sort of disembodied...
He's here somewhere. I know he is.
Dimension shifted.
If you guys are ever at my funeral, bring a tricorder. Okay. That's all I got to
we'll
say.
We'll be like, check that he's not temporally shifted into the next plane.
I'm going to do a magnetron sweep here.
That's it. Magnetron sweep. Write all of this down. Get your local neighborhood Vulcan to do a seance or whatever it was he was doing.
No, seriously. No, this is something that as I get a little older, I think this actually matters more to me. I mean, we only have so many days and hours and weeks and years on this planet. And I think as I get older, I find that just sort of this nihilistic worry, like, you know, what's the meaning of it all? You know, is it all pointless? Is there a point to life? And any episode about death like this sort of forces that issue. Like, what's the purpose of life? And the answer this episode gives is, well, it's all in relationships. Mm-hmm. Look at the relationships Janeway has found with her crew. Look how much they care. Look how much she cares about them. Look at the, you know, emotionally laden content of walking to the holodeck yeah. with a rose and a bottle of champagne at the end. You know, there's meaning in all of that. And even though you kind of go, wow, we're all just going to be blinked out of existence someday. You know, Star Trek says, no, there's meaning here yeah. in life and in relationships yeah. and in purpose. And this episode really speaks to me in terms of, you know, the meaning with a lowercase m, like, you know, the meaningfulness of day-to-day life mm-hmm. with other people.
Absolutely. And I mean, look at the impact that she's had on them, and that's what does continue. Yeah. So even if she wasn't to be there anymore, look at what she's already given to all of them.
Yeah.
I mean, my favorite quote from this episode, which is a quote that I always think of whenever I think about this episode, is the gift that she gave me and gave a lot of us here was the knowledge that we're better and stronger than we think.
Yeah.
I mean, how strong a thing is that to have given to somebody to take with them?
We do need to compare quotes, because I wrote down my favorite quote too. My favorite quote was from Ensign Harry Kim's speech at the memorial service, when he's telling the story about having purple lips from eating the berries, and he says Janeway told him, "Ensign, these are the times we have to remember." And you know, so much yeah. of life is like that. We have these are special times, we have to remember this.
Okay. I do have a favorite quote, and it's not all as touchy-feely as yours, but here it is. It's Captain Janeway. "We could stand here for all eternity, and I would never choose to go with you. Go back to hell, coward." It's like, yeah.
Yeah.
That is less
hardcore.
That's a beautiful moment.
No one will accuse you of overt sentimentalism.
I get accused of that all of the time. It's probably why I like this episode so much, because I'm hopelessly sentimental.
Now, I do like Tuvok making his log entry.
Yes.
Let it be known that I've also lost a friend. I was like, oh. And she even says, she's like, oh, Tuvok.
That's so, yeah. Tuvok. He's not going to emote in a group, mm-hmm. environment. He's going to do it privately in his logbook.
But an official log.
Yeah.
That says something. It's an official log.
Yeah, I want it to be known for the record, I think, mm-hmm. he says, doesn't he? We see so much depth, I think, from all of them here. You know, Tuvok gets that little moment there. Obviously, we've mentioned we get this moment from Harry, where Harry gets his little speech, and B'Elanna. You know, and it's some of the characters that get less airtime that we see a lot more from in this episode, which I really like. I mean, obviously we get a lot of Chakotay, but that's inevitable because of the context. But the others as well, I feel like it's the less well used characters that we see getting that time.
And I would say this episode is like the final nail in the coffin of the Starfleet Maquis tension.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Everyone has moved beyond it at this point, yeah. For sure.
Yeah, we are as one.
We are as one.
Are you saying time traveling Seven from a future season of Voyager, yes. made a stop at Janeway's fake funeral?
She showed up for the funeral. Yeah,
I think that makes sense.
She had a little bit of that champagne, then she started toasting. We are as one.
Oh, beautiful. Beautiful.
Well, down on the planet, you know, after she's brought back and everybody's, you know, heading back towards the ship, Janeway and Chakotay have their arms wrapped around each other. Sure, he's helping her back to the shuttlecraft. Sure, quotes. But they're, you know, close arms around each other. I was like, yes. And then at the very end, when they're going on their sail, she lets him go through the door first so she can look at his butt as he's walking out. Because if you watch her eyes, that's what she does.
You're making that up. You're making that up.
No. No, her eyes go down,
then
come back
up. I have to rewatch it now.
Brilliant. I love little things like that. Actually, one thing I noticed in this episode, this time I watched it, compared to all the previous times I've watched it, which is quite a few, at the point where we get the scene where he manages to revive her. Mm-hmm. So I think it's the very first time. He manages to revive her, and they have a little conversation about, oh, we need the medical supplies and the blankets, mm-hmm. or whatever, and he's sort of going to go off to the shuttle. There's this little moment where, after they finish talking, he just, like, turns her face towards him, and kind of they have this, like, really intense eye contact moment right before he leaves, and I'm just like...
And he cradles her face, yes. Just like, oh.
Yeah, yeah. I gotta say, some of these scenes are really tenderly done. I mean, the way he cradles her face, mm-hmm. the way he's holding her hand. You know, there are some wonderfully... just sentimental, tender movements inside, yeah. this. Yes,
thank
inside
you,
this
Jerry Taylor. Thank you.
You know, you can imagine this being, yeah. like, yeah, I'm trying to imagine like the Voyager romance novel version of the, like, you know, he caresses her tender hand, that kind of stuff, you know.
Sounds like you're ready to start writing some fan fiction, Zachary. I don't know.
Yeah, I missed my calling, clearly.
Off you go.
I'll beta that for you if you'd like.
Yeah, there's another little moment as well, actually, when they have the bit where they go into the cave and there are the imaginary Vidians, mm-hmm. or whatever. One of them shoots Chakotay, and in nonsensical style for somebody who has Starfleet, mm-hmm. training, she turns her back to him completely, exactly. and is like, oh, Chakotay!
Like, why would you turn your back on a Vidian?
Because she loves him.
I know,
yeah,
that.
The contrasts in this episode are really, really stark. There's all these tender scenes, and then there's some really violent stuff, like the euthanasia, yeah. death scene, and Janeway getting strangled by the Vidian. Yeah, it's actually, yeah. it's very dark suspense, almost horror scenes, you know? Paired with this really tender moments. It's a strange, strange pairing.
Yeah, there's a lot of contrast. And I think that's part of what makes it a really compelling episode for me, because you really don't know what's going to happen next.
Mm-hmm. It's almost worthy of like Halloween spooky Trek. It's like the haunted house or the fun house version of Janeway's mind. Like, you don't know what's coming next. Fake Vidians or Dr. Euthanasia, right? around every corner, there's some strange new spooky thing. This is like the unappreciated Halloween episode.
Or the creepy alien spider type dude who's trying to feed off of you.
Yeah, trying to lure her into his web.
Into his matrix.
Yeah, when you describe it in those terms, it doesn't sound like it would be a sentimental, tender episode.
And yet it is.
And yet those are the bits of the episode that are the most successful.
Yeah, those are the ones that keep me coming back. Because if it was just the alien, and it'd be a one and done for me.
Suzanne, these are the episodes we have to remember.
Exactly.
Yes. Exactly. Beautiful. Yeah, I mean, I think it's just a really successful Voyager episode for me. I mean, all problems aside, you can watch an episode like this and you can focus on the fact that if you start unpicking all of the science and unpicking all of the, well, is it in her head or is it in everybody's head or did this happen or did that happen? It all completely falls apart. And I fully admit that. And yet, I have no problem ignoring that because I focus on what it does do rather than what it doesn't do.
Definitely.
So yeah, and I think these are the things that are kind of unique to Voyager fans, honestly, because we are totally willing to give Voyager episodes a pass on all of the things that don't make sense because we love these characters so much and we're so seduced by the sentimentalism of it all.
Yeah, it's about liking it for what it does do, not liking it for what it doesn't do. Or going, oh, well, it fails at this, therefore we're going to write off the episode rather than focusing on the things that the episode does do well.
Which is the characters.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's what Voyager always does well.
Without a doubt. Voyager has the best characters, in my mind, of all Trek. They just relate to each other so well and with each other, and it just goes back to that whole family aspect. This is a family.
Yeah.
And you're just following them and their adventures. I do have some trivia. It's personal trivia. But Coda was the very first episode that I talked about on Trek FM. It was Ready Room number 140. I was on with Chris, Char, and Tristan, and it was a blast. So just a little bit of trivia if you'd like to know.
Yay. So it's an episode that means a lot to you.
Oh, yes.
A lot to you because of that as well.
Yes.
Yeah. As well as everything that we've already talked about, I connect with this episode personally as well. I feel like it's a great episode to watch when you might not be feeling so great because that message there, the message that Janeway gave us, you're better and stronger than you think. That's not just for the crew. You know, that's a message that everyone can take from the episode. That's how I read it anyway.
And I think it's a good episode to watch when you're feeling down for a couple of reasons. I mean, most of the time when you're going about your day-to-day business with people, you're not in crisis mode. People aren't dying. You're just taking life for granted. But when you get in crisis mode, when someone's life is at stake, you see how people really care for each other. And here we get to see someone's life actually at stake and how much everyone cares, at least in Janeway's mind. So it's a reminder people really do care. And, you know, we don't always see that in day-to-day life.
No.
And it's how you treat people that matters.
And it's a good reminder that after a crisis, you should have a rose and a bottle of champagne and a holiday program ready to go.
And sail away with Chakotay.
Ready to go. Yeah, because I mean previously, because obviously she's not had time to program this. Previously to this, is this just a program she was kind of enjoying by herself or?
No way.
Like cue the Christopher Cross music. Sailing, take me away.
Is this the first time that, you know, they've been for a moonlight sail on Lake George or not?
Maybe it's a regular thing. This is
maybe it's a regular thing. He didn't look surprised.
Definitely a weekly thing.
Yeah.
But never in the middle of a shift before.
We've just written that in a never in the middle of a shift. Well, I do have a few other bits of trivia as well, actually.
Hit us with it.
A few other little bits. Okay, so when they're in the shuttle, and we see this sort of big anomaly that they're trying to avoid flying into, or, well, Chakotay goes, let's try and fly into it, and Janeway's trying to stop them from flying into it. Apparently that's the same bit of CGI that they use in All Good Things.
Really?
Oh, for the temporal anomaly?
Oh,
yes.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. So that's an interesting little bit of trivia. The thing is, when you watch it does look really familiar, but then there are quite a few things in Star Trek that kind of have that same sort of look.
There's only so many ways you can do a temporal anomaly, right? So.
And why, you know, redo one when you already have one filed away? You don't have to pay somebody to do a new one.
Well, exactly. They could just kind of color it slightly differently or whatever. Yeah, I'm fine with them reusing stuff like that, especially because, you know, they might run into things that look similar to other things. Science kind of is science, really, in the same universe. And my other little bit of trivia is apparently this is also only the fourth time, or, well, the third of four times that we ever see standard resuscitation used in Star Trek. Apparently the other times were in Star Trek VI and in Past Tense in Deep Space Nine. Julian Bashir uses it on Gabriel Bell to try and save him.
I was going to say that ironically, all four times were actually in this episode.
And then this episode, which we're only counting as one.
Oh, I thought this brought the count up to eight.
And then in Scientific Method in season four of Voyager is the other time. So apparently those are the only times, which was interesting. Thank you, Memory Alpha.
I think Chakotay only did the CPR just so, you know, he could get a nice lip lock going with Catherine before she died. He saw that opportunity, he took it.
Well, you've got to wonder, haven't you? If there's anyone out there that's not shippers, they're going to hate this episode. But we're talking about Coda, so you can't not, really.
Yeah, you should know what you're getting into, folks.
No, that's a great scene. I've got a secret Janeway crush, so yeah, that scene works for me.
You have a secret Janeway crush?
Well, not anymore. I don't think it's a secret.
It's not secret anymore. I don't make any secret about my Janeway crush.
Me neither.
Yay, Janeway. How about we talk about which was our favorite death?
I think I covered my favorite death.
Yeah, you did. Actually,
mine is
didn't
definitely
you?
The Doctor euthanasia scene. I mean, that one works is remarkably well done.
Yeah, it's kind of weird though, isn't it? It's kind of,
yeah, like I said, it's the Funhouse version of Voyager. It's not. Yeah, it's not real. It's hyperbolic.
That scene with the Doctor is, I don't know. It's deeply uncomfortable to watch that. There are so many different kind of thoughts and feelings you have whilst watching that.
No, I'm curious about this because I didn't find myself too emotionally moved by it. Yes, it's a little disturbing. It's, you know, human euthanasia, but it's so much of a caricature of itself. It's clear that it's not really happening. So what is disturbing about it to you? Because for me, I just kind of wrote it off as, oh, this isn't real, and that's kind of brought me out of the episode. Maybe that's one of the things that I really don't like, is the things that I find remarkably unbelievable just bring me out of the drama of it and makes me identify less with the situation Janeway is in.
Okay, yeah, no, I get that. I understand where you're coming from, but I don't think I get that quite the same. And although it's obvious that it's not really happening and the Doctor's not really doing that, the moral kind of questions and how he's behaving and stuff, that's still there. Mm-hmm. And I still find myself really sort of thinking, if this was real, what would he actually do? How close or otherwise is this to how he'd actually behave? And if he did feel the need to carry something like that out, how would it be compared to what's actually happened here?
The real Doctor wouldn't have woken her up to euthanize her.
No, yeah. I don't think so either. But yeah. But also, I don't think he... I don't know whether he would have done it without anybody else there.
No.
Because, I mean, the emotional impact on him as well. I mean, we don't see... We see her sort of pass out on the floor, but we never see his face again after that. So when I watch horror movies and stuff, the horror movies that I find the scariest and the things that I really find that, like, kind of disturb me psychologically is where we don't actually get to see the thing.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's left to your imagination. And the fact that we don't see his face and his reaction to that, my head fills in all kinds of, like, horrible scenarios of how that, like, emotionally breaks him.
Okay.
To have to see that happen. That really kind of, it messes with my head quite a lot, that does.
But see, I think the way that Bob Picardo plays that scene, he plays it kind of coldly, though. He's not terribly affected by the fact that he's euthanizing Captain Janeway. He's really being, he's like the evil Doctor from Equinox.
Yeah,
he's not emoting at all. I see him as very stoic in what he's doing.
Yeah, and he does come across like that. But then, for me, that's like, well, if this was the real Doctor and he behaved like that, then that would be him holding it all back because he doesn't want to show how much he's being emotionally affected by it to her. And does he suddenly fall completely apart the second that she's actually gone?
Like a conflict in his programming, like the Doctor's going to
Yeah.
One of those situations.
If that was real, Kes would have been there.
Well, where was everybody else?
Yeah.
I mean, like, where was Chakotay?
Crying at her bedside. No, Catherine, you can't
exactly.
leave me.
I mean, like, if she... He wouldn't not have been there.
Oh, no.
And I know he wouldn't... The doctor would not have wanted Chakotay to be there for, you know, the actual euthanasia, but
He would have let him say
goodbye.
He
wouldn't have not been there. Well, he would have been there with her, wouldn't he? Yeah. He wouldn't have left her side once he knew that she was dying. Mm-hmm. So, yeah. I mean, the whole thing is really implausible, but it still makes you wonder about how would this have gone if it was real?
Yeah.
That's the thing that messes with my head anyway.
I'm thinking of a slightly different scene. I'm thinking of the scene where the doctor is trying to revive Captain Janeway and he's, you know, shocking her and it's not working. And, you know, Kes says, doctor, and the doctor says something like, don't question me, mm-hmm. or something like that. It was, I never quite know what to read into what the intention was behind that scene. The doctor, I mean, he's trying so hard to save her and Kes is saying, okay, that's enough. And he's talking back to Kes now. And it's supposed to, it seems like there's supposed to be some interaction there I'm not getting.
He's the doctor. Kes should not question him.
For me, that was an emotional outburst for me. That wasn't him thinking about what he was saying at all. That's very much I am in absolute panic mode. This is my captain dying on the exactly. table.
And I found that a lot more genuine than the doctor who was euthanizing the captain. Obviously.
Breathe deeply.
Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. But then if we kind of flip this back on itself again now and say, well, that's all in her head. That says some quite interesting things if that's how she
that's
sees
how
him.
She sees the doctor.
Doesn't it?
Poor doctor.
Yeah, I know. I mean, yeah. I don't want to... It's difficult because there's so much you can delve into here, but you don't want to delve into it to the point where the episode starts falling apart because it doesn't make sense. And that does happen if you try and analyze it too deeply, but...
See, now, Kate, I'm afraid you've made me a little paranoid. Every time someone tells me to take a deep breath, I'm going to worry they're trying to give me a neurotoxin. So thanks a lot for
just
that.
Just breathe deeply, Zachary.
Yeah. Quickly, engage the force field.
Get closer to your microphone and breathe deeply.
And see, I'll have to watch my back around you guys.
Yeah. It's for your own good. We're just trying to stop you from suffering.
Or embarrassing myself one way or the other.
Well, Zachary, throughout this discussion, were we able to sway how you feel about Coda now?
I think so. At the beginning of the episode, when we started recording, I like I said, this has never been one of my favorite Voyager episodes. Although, as we go through the list, there's so many interesting, fun moments in this episode. It's a tender, sweet episode. It's a little mismatch for me. The horror of the episode combined with the tenderness of some of the moments is kind of a stark contrast. Kay, I know you said that works a little better for you than it does for me. But this episode really does solidify in my mind how the crew feels about each other. And for the three of us, I think that's one of the primary motivating factors for why we're Voyager fans. We like seeing the interaction and the relationships among the crew, the family, and the friendliness and the nurturing relationship they have with each other. And this episode really brings that to light. So I think I don't know if it'll ever be one of my favorite Voyager episodes, but it you definitely convinced me that it's better than I had given it credit for all these years. For years I've been saying, oh, I don't like Coda very much. But then, you know, as I watched it today, I did tear up. I got moved by it. I laughed and I cried and dreamed of Janeway and Chakotay, you know, sailing by moonlight. And so, yeah, I've come to the other side.
Mission accomplished.
Yay.
Well, you guys, it's been fun talking about the nuances of Coda together. We've laughed together, we've cried together, we've had near-death experiences together, but I think it's time to call it a night and go sailing off into the moonlight together. But Coda isn't the only thing we've been talking about here on Trek FM this past week, so here's a quick look at some of the other things you may have missed elsewhere on the network.
Previously on Trek.fm, Standard Orbit.
So it counts as saving Earth even though they really didn't do anything. They just kind of observed history, right? If anything, they
Were part of it, though. They wound up being part of it, right? They probably, well, in many ways, they interfered with the saving of Earth.
Right, yeah. Yeah. That's what I'm saying. Like, they saved the day despite themselves.
Earl Grey.
I just, this week with my students, I'm a teacher, and What is so great about Star Trek? And isn't it like Star Wars? And I'm like, no, it is not. Let me tell you why. And that's always where I start. It's like, Star Trek, this is where we could be. It is someplace where we could end up going. You know, who knows? But it's our timeline. It's our potential future.
Stage 9, a podcast about the people who make Star Trek.
We had many Ferengi, and they were all quite different. Nog and Rom and Brunt and Quark and the Grand Nagus and Moogie. They all had very different voices, very different worldviews. They were all characters in their own right, but they all fit into that culture.
And that's what else is happening on Trek.fm.
Check out these shows and find out what we're talking about in your favorite corner of the Star Trek universe and beyond. You'll find us wherever you get your podcasts. If you're an Apple user, be sure to hit the subscribe button. That helps us out greatly, and it makes it easier for other listeners to find the show as they search iTunes. If you're not an Apple user, we've got you covered as well. You can find our shows on Stitcher, TuneIn, SoundCloud, Windows Phone, and of course you can stream and download the MP3 file from our website and grab the RSS link as well.
Another way you can help us keep all of our shows coming to you each week is to become a patron of the network on Patreon. If you visit patreon.com/trekfm, that's patreon.com/trekfm, you'll find our current goals and different milestone contribution levels along with all of the great perks we have for you. These perks include early access to content, exclusive content, producer credits, seats on our content development team, and more. We really appreciate any support you can give us and hope you'll join the team. Again, you'll find all the details at patreon.com/trekfm.
Well, before we go, there are some people we'd like to thank. We'd like to thank C. Brian Jones, the founder and publisher of Trek.fm, our executive producers, Charlene Schmidt, Matthew Rushing, and Kenneth Tripp, Aaron Harvey, our art director, and Richard Marquez, our production manager. We'd also like to thank our associate producers here on To The Journey. We'd like to thank Jamie Deuce, Bruce Lish, Dante Hopkins, Brian Beliso, and Ju Kim. We really want to thank you for your continued support of To The Journey and for the Trek.fm network.
And don't forget to check out Enterprise in Space, a project of the nonprofit National Space Society. Visit enterpriseinspace.org to find out more and to get your seat on the mission. And check out audible.com, offering more than 150,000 titles for your desktop or mobile device. To get a free audiobook of your choice, visit audibletrial.com/trekfm.
So we'd really love to hear anything that you have to tell us about the episode that we've done today. We'd like to hear your thoughts on Coda or any other feedback. There are loads of different ways that you can do that. If you go to our website, there's a form there. That's at trek.fm/contact. If you want to leave us a voicemail, you can look in the sidebar on our To The Journey show page on the Trek FM website or go to speakpipe.com/trekfm. You can find us on Twitter at trekfm. You can find us on Facebook at facebook.com/trekfm. And on Facebook, you can also find us in the Babel Conference. This is our listeners-only group. If you type the Babel Conference, B-A-B-E-L, into the search field on Facebook or go to our website at trek.fm and click discussion on the menu bar. It's a closed group for listeners only, but if you click on join, then someone will let you right on in there. And we'll really like to hear anything that you've got to say joining the discussion. We also invite you to leave a rating and a review of To The Journey on iTunes. Suzanne, where can people contact you if they want to talk to you about Coda?
You can find me on the Babel Conference. You can also find me on Twitter. My handle is at KJaneWay8. That's the letter K, Janeway, and the number 8. Zachary, where can people find you if they want to talk about the Doctor's euthanasia of Janeway?
Well, speaking of euthanasia, you can find me elsewhere on the Trek FM network, hosting Metatrek's Trek FM show on Star Trek and philosophy. And you can also find me on the Babel Conference if you want to talk about anything related to Star Trek with me there. And you can find me on Twitter. My handle there is just my name, at Zachary Fruhling. That's Zachary, Z-A-C-H-A-R-Y, and Fruhling, F-R-U-H-L-I-N-G. And Kay, when you're not sailing by moonlight with a bottle of champagne, where can listeners find you on the Trek FM network and around the interwebs?
Well, the best place to find me is in the Babel Conference. I'm generally hanging around in there, having some great chats with people. And you can also find me on Twitter. My handle there is at ChocoWeeble.
So join us next week as we take turns phasering apples off of each other's heads. But until then, this has been To The Journey.